Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And our first guest and our only guest during this podcast is Neil Plaxey. He's a professor at Broward College and the author of more than 30 published novels. He has also edited and contributed to many anthologies. For the past 20 years, Neil's been able to publish about 4 books a year or so. He's unbelievable. From a gay detective series to a very popular series of mysteries about a golden retriever. His most recent books are Deadly Labors, a police procedural mystery set in Honolulu. And the latest in his golden retriever mystery series is called Dogs Green Earth. Lying on the Beach, we're so thrilled to have Neil as our guest. I'm proud to say he's been a friend of mine for, 30-something years. And Neil, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
And I'm going to go right to the heart of this. How are you ever so prolific? I mean, you crank out 3-4 books a year. I've done one book, and I know what a painful birth that was. How are you able to just do it and do it and do it again? I mean, I'm just amazed.
I think part of the secret is just applying your butt to the chair every day. You know, the common wisdom is that if you can write a page a day for a year, at the end of the year, you have a 365-page book. My books are not quite as long as that, so I can get more of them, and I try and write more than a page a day. I think it's also easier because quite often I write series books.
Yeah.
So when I walk into the start of a new Golden Retriever mystery, I already know who the main characters are. I know where the setting is. I usually walk into it knowing what the inciting action is. So, for example, the book that I've just started now starts with Steve and his golden retriever, Rochester, walking along the Delaware River on a nice sunny day, and they meet an older man who is confused. And so they call the police to get the man taken back to his home. And within a week or so, the man turns up dead in the river. Who did it? Did he fall into the river? Did someone push him? And now Steve and Rochester are nose to the ground looking for clues.
That's a great... I'm hooked.
I'm hooked too. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, what a great... your inspiration? What's your inspiration? Like, okay, I got to do another Golden Retriever story. You know, we go like, okay, let's start off with, you know, I mean, how did you come up with this specific idea?
I have to blame it all on my dogs. I have two golden retrievers, Rhodey and Griffin, and they need a lot of walking. And so, you know, one day we'll be out walking and I'll just start thinking, oh, I need an idea for a new golden retriever mystery. And, you know, what's going to happen? And so I just start thinking, you know, I'll think out loud or I'll think while I'm waiting for the dogs to do their business. And sometimes I'll get nowhere, but sometimes I'll come up with an idea and then I let it simmer in my head for a day or two and then I start to write.
Wow. So Neil, for our audience, because they're going to be intrigued when they hear this right away too. I know the first question they're going to ask me if I don't ask you. Because you write series of books, can someone start with one particular book, or do they have to go to the beginning of the series?
That's a great question, Lois. And the businessman in me wants to say, oh, you can start anywhere. And pretty much the mysteries are self-contained. But I like a mystery best when the detective grows and changes throughout the series so that the action of the book has some effect on the protagonist. And also, there's a lot of background stuff that happens. My hero starts out a divorced guy, newly returned to his hometown after a stint in prison for computer hacking. He's alone and lonely, and he meets his next door neighbor's golden retriever, who is just too happy and excited and friendly. And she gets killed early in the book, of the first book, and he ends up taking over the care of the golden. And then throughout the course of 10 books, he meets a lovely woman. They fall in love. They move in together. Things happen in the background. So, yes, you can pick up any book in the series for the mystery and the location and the enjoyment of reading. But to get the most out of it, I always suggest that people start with the first book.
What about your other series?
It's the same thing. I think it was Michael Connelly, who is a famous mystery author, whose books were made into the Bosch TV series, said, it's not how the detective works the case, it's how the case works the detective. And so in each of my series, the characters start out in one place and they keep moving forward. In the Mahu series, my character is a conflicted guy who gets dragged out of the closet while he's investigating the first case. And then in each book, he moves through the stages that I think gay people go through when they come out. He starts to meet gay friends in book two. He falls in love in book three, you know, and so on. So, yes, you can always read them just for the mystery. But I think in the best series, and this is not to, you know, demean Agatha Christie, because Miss Marple and Hercule Poirot are pretty much the same characters when you start the books as when you finish.
Right.
But I like books in which the characters grow and change and are affected by what happens to them.
Neil, going back to the procedural part of this. So when you start the mystery part of it, do you know where it's going to end? Like, okay, this guy's going to be dead. He's going to be dead because of this. And it's going to be poison. And do you have all that mapped out? Or are you just writing it like, and as it unfolds and unfolds? Is that what you're saying?
What I try and do is use a screenwriting technique that I learned when I was in graduate school at FIU for creative writing to break the plot up into thirds. And I will know the inciting action. In the course of the last Mahu book, Deadly Labors, which came out in December, in that book, I knew that a policeman was killed by a bouncer in a bar, and then the whole thing was hushed up. And Kimo is asked by his mother, who is a friend of the bouncer's mother, right, would you look into this? It just doesn't smell right. And it took me a while to figure out why that police officer was at the bar and then who killed him and why, and what that was going to, how that investigation was going to unfold. So I start out usually knowing what the inciting action is, and then I try and figure out quickly what that first plot point is. In that case, it was Kimo, who's my detective hero, discovering that the police had hushed up the death of an officer. So, once I knew that, somebody is messing with the records to keep this quiet, then I have to figure out who's messing with the records and why. I hope that leads me to the second plot point about two-thirds of the way through. Often when the hero will figure out what's going on and then lead to a confrontation with the bad guy that will bring, you know, the bad people to justice. So it's one of the quotes that I had on my computer for a long time was, writing a novel is like driving at night with your headlights on. You can only see a short distance ahead, but you can make the whole trip that way.
Interesting.
Have you ever had regrets about a direction you'd taken and you wanted, even after the book was published, to change it?
Well, I have a lot of unfinished books on my computer, on my hard drive, because especially the earlier books that I started to write, I cut myself into a corner. You know, oh, I need a specific thing to happen in order to make this plot work. And that kind of thing just doesn't happen.
Wow.
So I've gotten stuck. Nowadays, I don't get stuck as much. But I do, often what I'll have to do is go back after I've written the first draft and make some changes to the book to make sure that everything works. Or drop in some more clues, or drop in some red herrings.
Do you get a lot of input from the publisher or maybe your agent to say, hey, we want to get the main character married off this edition, or let's have the dog have a love interest or whatever? I mean, is there feedback from the publisher or agent saying, we can do that or not really?
My books these days are all what we call self-published.
Oh.
So I write what I want. I hire an editor to go over it, and I certainly take the editor's advice. But I've heard too many stories of people who've gotten derailed because, oh, the publisher likes the book but wants something changed. A friend of mine in college, for example, wrote a novel, a sensitive coming-of-age novel about a young African-American girl, and it ended with a violent act. And mm-hmm. through a connection, she got it to Toni Morrison, who was an editor in New York at the time. And Toni Morrison said, you know, the book doesn't really match the ending. I would like you to change the ending to match this, you know, lovely, sensitive coming-of-age book you have written. My friend decided, you know what? I don't want to do that. I want to make the book match the ending. And
right.
she did. And Toni Morrison turned her down. And my friend went on to become a playwright.
Wow.
So I want to write the books that I want to write. I know I have an audience for them. I know already that if I'm writing a story with a romantic plot, that if I don't have a happy ending, readers are not going to be happy. Romance readers want their HEA, happily ever after, or at least an HFN, happy for now.
Yeah.
So I'm not likely to get those kind of big comments anymore.
Yeah, I know, I don't know if our listeners might be interested in this, but early on in your writing career, you turned to me because I was a TV news reporter and you had a TV news reporter subplot going on. And
absolutely.
I was the expert that helped fill you in on, no, we would never do that, and yes, we would do that, and no, this is how we do that, and this is how we get our assignments, this is how we do a live shot, and I hope I was helpful, but that was fun.
Oh, absolutely. And if I recall, you even came and spoke to the Mystery Writers
right.
of America lunch one year.
I did.
How to use TV news reporters in your books. I think it's important. If I don't know something, to do the research on it. Sometimes that research will be, I can do from books or from the internet or Google Maps. And other times I have people that I call on. I have a good friend who is a librarian in Kaneohe, which is on the island of Oahu. And I will occasionally drop her an email to say, hey, I have my character traveling through this place. Is this really what it looks like? And and she can write back and say, oh, the area where you put this bar, there really are no other bars. It's all just wilderness. But you're welcome to put the bar there if you want.
Well, I can say
that. And then I have other people for other questions.
It drives me nutty when I, you know, watch a movie or read a book and they have a television news reporter in there, and they do stuff that we would never do, or they go live without a live truck. So, let's go live. Okay, let's go live. Like, you can't just go live. That kind of stuff drives
and
all
that,
real reporters
I know
crazy
that
when
that,
they find it.
I know that really annoys readers, and one of the places that readers get very irritated is when you use weapons incorrectly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you use a a rifle, or, you know, when you really mean a shotgun, or you use those terms interchangeably, or you have a safety on a gun that doesn't have a safety. So one of the ways I get around that is I avoid using guns whenever possible. But I also have a friend who is also a writer, who is a retired Florida Department of Law Enforcement agent. And anytime I have gun questions, I drop him a line. And of course, I always have to have a, if I'm thanking people in the book, in my acknowledgments, I always have to add a line that says, all the mistakes are mine. Don't blame them on any of my experts.
That's very nice. I like that. Do you find that it's more fun for you to write a ongoing series, or is it more profitable, or do readers just keep wanting an ongoing series? Why stay with, you know, Chemo, or stay with the Golden Retriever series? Is it because you like to do it, or because readers like it more, or why?
I think it's a mix of the two. As I got more successful in my career, I found people asking me for more books in that series, particularly with the Mahu series, which is about a gay cop coming out of the closet and all the things that happened to him. A lot of readers have an emotional connection to that series and to that character. And so they'll come up to me at fan conferences, for example, or they'll email me. I just got a message today through Facebook. Oh, mm-hmm. I've just discovered your series and read them all the way through. Are you going to be continuing? So the readers want those books, and I'm happy to give them that as long as there's something more for me to say.
Neil, you know, who is the demographic of your readers?
It's all I can give you is anecdotal information. I'm going to say that they are older. They are gay men, and they are straight women. I think the older part is important because when you're young, I read a lot when I was a teenager. And then I got to college and I had to start reading textbooks. And then I was starting out in my career and I was working long hours. And then, you know, you start to, you know, you get married, you make a family, you don't have as much time to read then as you might. When you get later in life, after the kids have gone and, you know, you have a more settled life. So I think
right. That's
why the readers tend to demographically older. I have a lot of straight female readers, particularly of the gay books. First of all, because if you're a dedicated romance reader, for example, you've kind of worked your way through all of the standard stories of a romance, the surprise baby, the forced engagement, you know, all those standard tropes of romance. If you put two men in the mix instead of a man and a woman, that puts a new spin on things, and plus you get extra tropes that you can start to explore, like the coming out story, the disapproving parent story, the how do we make a baby if we don't have the right plumbing story, that kind of stuff. And those older women who are fans of romance, first of all, they love the new aspects to the stories. They also have warm feelings toward the characters, and they want these guys to have happy lives.
Right. Neil, when you're writing a book, how much anxiety do you have? I mean, when you write a page, do you often think to yourself, oh my God, I wrote these words, but is this the right thing to write? Is it the right direction? Will somebody else think it's as brilliant as I do?
I don't think that what I'm writing as I'm writing is particularly brilliant. I'm just trying to get the story out on that first draft, figure out what's happening to who and where and when.
Interesting.
And then I'll go back on a second draft and I'll start layering in more details, or I will say, oh, this whole chapter is all narration. I need to make a scene here. I need to make conversation.
Right.
Or, you know, what does it smell like? What does it sound like? How can I find the detail, physical details that will enhance the emotional meaning of the scene?
So how many drafts are you going through then?
I will usually write, I'll write a draft that often is not even quite finished because I tend to rush my endings. Then I'll go back and write a second full draft. Then I'll usually go back and look at it one more time before I send it off to an editor. So that's three drafts. Then the editor will read it, come back to me with comments, and I will write a fourth draft. And that's usually what gets published.
Wow.
Are you using the same editor for all of these books?
No. First of all, I had editors from publishing houses for many of the books. Like in the Mahu series, that went through three different publishers before I finally took the rights back myself. And I also want to find, there are editors who have particular specialties, some who are better at romance, some who are better at mystery. I have a historical mystery set in Victorian, a historical romance set in Victorian times. And I just found an editor who specializes in that kind of book because I want somebody who is really aware of Victorian era stuff.
So where did you find this person, male or female? How did you find this?
I am Facebook friends with a number of authors who write in that genre. Mm-hmm. And so I asked one of them for recommendations. Who do you recommend, or who would you use who has this specialized knowledge? And so I got a great recommendation from this author whose work I love. And I contacted the editor. We worked out an arrangement. She read the first page of the book and said, oh, I'm already interested. I'm intrigued. I want to know where this is going to go. And so I hired her.
Wow. What about the clip art, the art that being yourself published? You always have such great covers on your book. Are you the one creating that? Or you helping farm it out?
I originally did the covers myself using stock photos that I bought from various websites. Now, because I recognize the importance of really professional looking covers, I have a cover designer who I use, who is also she and her sister are novelist team who have won a bunch of awards and write great books. And this particular sister is also a very talented artist. And so with her knowledge of what makes a good book cover based on her own writing and her own graphic skills, she's able to give me a bunch of different ideas, say, you know, do you want to use this person? Do you want to use this location?
Wow.
And then put all those elements together to make a really professional looking cover. And I think that's probably the most important thing for somebody trying to sell a book.
Your covers are great.
That people will really be intrigued by, that looks professional,
right,
and represents your book in a way that says, this book is going to be a good story. It's going to be well edited. It's going to be well presented to you, the reader. Because too often you start reading a book and the grammar is bad, or the story doesn't make sense, or the characters don't engage you, and so you give up. I want people to look at the cover and say, this is a book I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah, you want to hook them. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Neil,
you want to hook them, but you also want to represent through the quality of the cover that what's between the covers is quality too.
How much time do you spend a day, forget about the writing, doing all the background work, like you just mentioned the cover, and doing all the finding editors, you know, researching, you know, networking, selling, buying. What does that require?
I do a lot of the research is part of my writing time. So I will be writing and I'll say, oh, I need to know what this looks like. And so I'll jump off to Google Maps, for example. So it's hard to separate out the research time.
Okay.
The business part, I would say, is probably no more than 5 to 10 hours a week.
That's a lot of hours.
Dashing
okay.
off an email to the, you know, right to the cover designer saying, hey, I have a new book and here's what's going on in it. Here's the tone. Now it obviously takes more time. I got the rights back from my publisher to the Mahu series this summer. And so we relaunched that series with brand new covers. That, first of all, I had to read through each of those books and make sure that they were, you know, correctly proofed, that I hadn't done anything, you know, that was going to change something. Like, oops, you know, this character is, you know, is older in book 3 than he is in book 4. That kind of thing. And fortunately, I didn't run into a lot of those problems, but it did make me sit down and say, particularly for the younger characters, people's kids, how old is this kid now? Is this kid in diapers? Is this kid in school?
Right.
And, you know, so, and that kind of thing matters again, if especially when a reader discovers you and then devours your books one after another, which happens a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
you don't want to be embarrassed.
I just read
right.
all the books in your series, so you don't want to disrupt them by, you know, having them say, wait a minute, this kid was born 2 books ago and it's been 2 years. Why is he still in diapers?
Right.
So, and then, you know, then the process of deciding what each book's cover was going to be like, that took a while. And then the process of uploading the books to each of the places where you can buy it, to Amazon and Draft to Digital, which distributes your books to Apple and Kobo and other places. You know, doing all of that business stuff takes a while, as well as when I'll launch a book, I will want to write some blog posts to support it, maybe do some guest blogging, maybe doing a podcast. You know, all
right.
that stuff does take time to arrange.
And just so listeners know, we can do it again at the very end, but how can people find out more about getting your books and what's the website you want to send people to? That'd be very helpful.
My main website is mahubooks.com, mahubooks.com. Fortunately, because I have such a unique last name, as long as you spell it right, Plakcy, when you Google that name, I'm the only one who pops up. With
oh, great.
Maybe one of my cousins occasionally buried several pages in.
That's interesting.
Okay. And the Golden Retriever series is on the Mahu books as well?
It's on the Mahu site, but there's also its own website, goldenretrievermysteries.com.
Okay,
but
so
even I have trouble remembering the I before E except after C rule when I start typing that.
Yeah, retriever is a tough word. You know, I go by Innovation Insider. I can't tell you how many people don't know there are 2 N's in innovation. I'm like, it's like, no, 2 N's. That's why you couldn't find.
Well, and, you know, just to put in my 2 cents as a college professor, one of the things that I do love about the internet and having students do research on the internet is it reminds them that spelling matters.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And if you type in the wrong URL, you'll often go to some place that you don't really want to go, or you just won't find the information that you want. And I know that myself because I'll start Googling for something, and if I'm not spelling it right, I'm not getting where I want to go.
Sure.
Neil, before we end, I really want you to tell people where you're doing all of your writing.
Oh, at Starbucks.
Isn't there a million distractions? I mean, how do you do that? There's so many things going on around you. You must be looking up.
And here's the thing, Lois. I just read an article recently that said you are most productive when there is a low level of noise around you. That when it's
too quiet, it's hard to think.
When it's too noisy, then it's difficult. But if you have this low level hum of music in the background, people talking, I find it's also useful because periodically I'll need a character description. What does this guy look like? And if I'm writing in my home or my office, I don't have any choices. But if I'm at Starbucks, I can look over and go, oh, look at that guy with the tattoos up and down his arm. Oh, he's going to be the guy I'm writing. He's going to be my next description.
But
so,
are you ever like speaking to yourself or laughing and people are looking at you?
Not usually, but every now and then when I'll be writing a very steamy sex scene, I'll kind of look around and go, I wonder if anybody knows what I'm writing here.
Oh, that's too funny. I love that. But, you know, going back to Neil's point, I find that if I'm all by myself working, I mean, I'm pretty motivated, so I get my work done, but I might close my eyes for a second or maybe start watching a little television. But if there's somebody else around, it kind of keeps me more honest. Like, okay, you know, get back to work. You know, you can't start just drifting around. I have to get back to work. So I see the advantages to it. And I do it occasionally, too, on the road. I go to a Starbucks and knock out some work sometimes just because it's, you know, it keeps me like, you know, it keeps my nose to the grindstone a little bit.
There are certainly times when there are people speaking really loud.
Oh, that's annoying.
And it's hard to ignore that. But what I do is I give myself permission to tune in for a minute or two. Who are they? What are they talking about? You know, is this a person applying for a job?
That.
Is this a date situation? Is this a realtor trying to sell a property? And so that's all storytelling in the end, figuring out who these characters are and what they're doing there. So I give myself permission to snoop around a little bit, and you never know when something like that is going to come in handy.
Adil, do you ever wake up during the night and say, ooh, I need to write? You know, I just figured something out. This is the time to do it.
I occasionally, in that time between sleeping and waking, I will have some kind of an odd dream. And literally for the end, I did have an odd dream about a person running between targets at a rifle range and someone shooting at them.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. And that, I realized, was the motivation, let's say. That was the crime in the book that I was writing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how the person died. And that was a different way than I had expected. You know, I was about halfway through the book. But I was like, oh, that's such a cool way for this person to die. And now let me just go back and make a few changes. But that came to me in some form as one of those half-waking dreams.
Love it. I think we're good. What do you think, Lois?
I think we could go on forever with this guy.
Yeah, I agree with Neil.
Yeah, so we better
end.
Yeah.
And I think our listeners need to know that they see Neil in a Starbucks writing. Find out if he's writing a steamy sex scene, because you might want to like just check up on him. Say, hey, what are you writing about? So look for Neil at your neighborhood Starbucks. Neil, thank you very much. This was really great insight. Once again, give us your website. It's mahubooks.com, correct?
Yep. M-A-H-U. Mahu is a derogatory term for gay in the Hawaiian culture, which is being reclaimed just like queer is. So I am very happy to be part of that movement to reclaim this word.
Cool. Mahu, M-A-H-U,
books.com.
And also Golden Retriever
Mysteries.com.
But learn how to spell retriever first. And again, thank you very much.
Or just Google me.
Or Google Neil Plaxi. Okay, right. Thank you very much. So once again,
thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We love having you. Maybe we'll do this again. Thanks so much. Once again, I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And we have all been lying on the beach. Take care.